You're listening to the Boogeyman's Closet podcast. Explicit language and spoilers ahead. You've been warned. And we are back for yet another episode of The Boogeyman's Closet. As always, I am Mike Alvarez.
Maurice Killifer.
Susie Hunt.
Welcome back, Susie. Good to have you back. This is episode 107. We're continuing our Second Chance movies with House by the Cemetery from 1981.
House by the Cemetery. The kid is fucking dumb. Do-na-na-na-na-na-na. Both parents are dead and buried. He looks just like a thumb. Do-na-na-na-na-na-na.
Wow, we started the singing early in this one.
Yep. I planned that shit.
Oh shit. It's an hour and 27 minutes, directed by Lucio Fulci. I can never say his name right.
Lucio Fulci.
Obviously we would know him from Zombie, aka Zombie 2, aka Nightmare Island. Also, City of the Living Dead, The Beyond, The Black Cat, The New York Ripper, Manhattan Baby, Zombie 3, and Demonia. when I get to the cast, I know I'm going to fuck up all the names. But let's go around the table and see what everyone thinks of this crazy classic. Susie, we'll start with you.
Oh, thank you very much. I love this movie so, so much. I love the Gates of Hell trilogy, which this is the third installment. The first two are City of the Living Dead and The Beyond. So The House by the Cemetery closes it up. In case you couldn't tell by my little ditty, I fucking hate Bob, the little kid. I think he looks like a thumb. I think he's fucking stupid. And we'll get into more of that as the podcast goes long. But I think this movie is really creepy. It really doesn't have any eye trauma, which I know we've talked about Italian horror. That is kind of a staple. But it still has other creepy elements. Like, if I moved into a house and I found that there was a tomb in my living room.
Right.
I'd be like, I'm sorry. Nope. Mm-mm. Gotta move.
I'm done here.
Yeah, sorry. Didn't disclose that in the contract. I mean, the whole, it's just a great movie. I love it. I love it. This is the fourth time I've seen it. I watched it when it was up the first time and it didn't make it, because I know I've said that a lot of times I'll watch movies when they don't make the cut. Mm-hmm. And I watched this and then I did a little reading on it and found out that it was part of the trilogy. And I watched the other two and I was like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I also recommend that people watch the other two movies in the Gates of Hell trilogy.
I agree. And hopefully one day we'll have those on here.
Yes.
Maybe when we revisit Italian horror. Oh,
we should do that soon.
Well, Maurice, we'll toss it over to you. What are your thoughts on this?
I like the movie. I've only seen it a couple times. It's a good, bad movie.
Yeah.
The acting is terrible.
Oh, Bob
is a... I can't think of anything nice to say about Bob.
Well, you shouldn't have anything nice to say about him.
Bob sucks.
Bob is... I don't think I know a good Bob, a decent Bob.
Bob the Butthead Bitch. That's what I wrote down about him. That's his name.
he's just an evil kid. Evil.
No, he's just a dumbass.
He's definitely a dumb little bastard.
Oh yeah. The music is pretty interesting. It goes from like, there's some parts with that had some disco in it. It had some 8-bit music. It had a little bit of everything. It was quite interesting.
The soundtrack is definitely interesting in this flick. Like, I wrote down in a few spots, like, I love... There are certain parts that I'm just like, man, I love this music. And the other parts where I'm like, what the hell was that?
Right, like
the very disco Italian part. Horror, though.
What's that?
It's very Italian horror.
Oh yeah, yeah, and yeah, it definitely has some disco influence with a lot of it.
Now the one part sounded like a dungeon in Legend of Zelda. Towards the end,
I could see that actually.
So that was kind of cool.
You just needed the finding the key sound, that do 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 do.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, you know, like I said, the acting is not great, but you know, if it's one of those put yourself in the situation kind of movies, and you know, it's pretty terrifying, especially being locked in a basement with who knows what.
Right.
Dr. Freudenstein, aka Dr. Satan.
Yeah, you gotta wonder if Rob Zombie didn't pull a little influence from this film.
Oh, I'm sure he did. But yeah, like I said, this is the second or third time I've seen the movie, and you know, if I come across it or if I'm going through Italian horror movies, I'd probably watch it again.
Yeah. No, I agree. This is one of those films that's definitely easily rewatchable for me. It's something I did not see until I was an adult. I want to say it was well after I saw The Beyond. And yeah, it was, God, I want to say it was during streaming stuff. So it was probably in my 30s. But I watched it again a couple years back around Halloween and kind of had forgotten like a few interesting moments in the film. But there were stuff that always stuck with me, like Bob's voice.
Oh, yeah.
Bob's voice. And then the end sequence stuck with me.
The fact that he sounds like a teenager?
No, he doesn't.
He sounds like a
whiny fucking bitch.
He sounds like a grown-ass man trying to sound like a child.
I know. He sounds like a teenager in a kid's body.
Oh, it's terrible. It's so terrible. But, this movie is definitely an interesting horror flick. It's, I don't want to say it's suspenseful, but it is eerie. You know, like the whole film, there's just a vibe of like spookiness throughout it. So
spooky.
I would say this is like one of those films that I feel the urge to watch around Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Something about it that's got that, you know, it fits the vibe. Yeah,
it's the house by the cemetery, of course.
Right. And I love
so
that house.
Goth.
That house is gorgeous. You know, despite the tomb in the living room or the hallway or wherever the hell it was, I was kind of confused by some of the layout. They said hallway, but I'm like, there's chairs and a couch over there. So I'm like, okay, that's your hallway? Interesting. But yeah, overall, I really enjoy this film. It's definitely something that I will watch again and again. There's a few Italian horror films that always wind up in my my Halloween viewing, like Demons. Demons is another one that I always want to watch.
Yes.
I love that film. Zombie, as we've discussed before, I love that movie, but there's parts of it that just skeeve me out, particularly the eye trauma. It's kind of difficult to watch for me, but
this was more mouth throat trauma.
Yeah, that there is a spectacular kill with some throat trauma, but that same person does have eye trauma after the fact. We just don't see it. You know, we see when this person is dead, her one eye is all fucked up. So clearly something happened off camera. but yes, definitely a fan of this movie. I would highly recommend it if you like Italian horror. But let's go through the cast and watch me butcher all the names. So,
don't worry, I will help you. I'm on the show.
You can just say fodder A through Z because I don't think any of these guys have done anything worthwhile.
Well, I mean, they've all done some other Fulci films. So. But we have Lucy Boyle, played by Catriona McCall. I don't know if I said that right. But The Beyond, Maneaters, The Hitchhiker, and Afraid of the Dark. Then Dr. Norman Boyle, played by Paolo Malco, The New York Ripper, Escape from the Bronx, which is an awesome movie. Demons 3, The Ogre. And then Anne the Babysitter, who drove me fucking nuts. I'm going to say this wrong, but Anya Peroni. Inferno, Tenebrae, and Fraccia vs. Dracula.
Sure.
and then Bob Boyle, the little thumb-looking bitch.
Fucking Bob the bitch.
Bob the thumb. I like that. But that's Giovanni Frezza. I'm probably saying that wrong.
Manhattan. It doesn't matter. He doesn't matter.
None of this matters. Warriors of the Wasteland and Demons. Then Mae Freudstein, played by Sylvia Colatina. The Great Alligator, Murder Rock, Dancing Death, which is like, all right, that's a weird name. Laura Gittleson, who also drove me crazy. Dagmar Lissandar, Werewolf Woman, The Black Cat, Devilfish, and Two Little Italians. And then Dr. Freudstein, Giovanni De Nava, played in From Beyond, and again, Murder Rock, Dancing Death. So there's a lot more people, but I was like, I just wrote those people down.
Don't forget about Daniel Douglas, Giampaolo Saccarola.
You mean their precious Daniel?
Oh my goodness! I said, what the fuck, my precious Daniel?
I laughed so hard at that. He's like, oh, here's our precious Daniel Douglas. It's like, wait, what?
No one's fucking precious in this movie. Just shut the fuck up.
Exactly. But for those that haven't seen it, the basic plot is a New England home is terrorized by a series of murders, unbeknownst to the guests that a gruesome secret is hiding in the basement.
And we open with damn titties.
We open with dem titties in the titular house by the cemetery.
Yes.
And I'm like, we don't know this girl's name, so I just wrote, Girly starts calling out for Steve, and then I went, hey, Steve!
Steve, where are you, Steve? But then we find out her name is Stella!
But, no, I got a question here, because she's getting dressed calling out for Steve. So she begins looking around the house for him. I'm like, why was he missing in the first place? Like, clearly you guys just fucked. Did he go off to piss somewhere?
He went out to get a beer. Just like Halloween.
That's right, Maurice. You know.
But wasn't this an abandoned house that they were hiding out in?
He was even,
it doesn't matter.
Hey, they took that right from Halloween. He was even hanging on the door. this scene is right out of Halloween.
This is very true. But again, it's like, okay, obviously you would have had to brought the beer in. There's no refrigeration in an abandoned house, so why wasn't the beer in the room with you?
Why are you asking all of these questions?
It was in the cooler in the shag van.
Okay. That's right. We're just going to go Halloween rules. You're right. This is totally the Halloween scene. I didn't make that connection, but the more you say it, I'm like, holy shit, you're not wrong. Oh my god. So yeah, she finds him hanging on the back of the door with his head.
And like half of his fucking skull is missing.
Yeah, his head split like wide open, and there's scissors in his chest. And then she screams. We see a zombified hand hold up a knife behind her head, plunge it down into the back of her skull and out of her mouth, and bye bye titties.
Shane's like, he did not watch this movie with me. I just want to be clear about that. But he was in and out, popping in and out of the room. He goes, that would have been a hell of a lot more believable if the knife would have been shaken like it was made of jello. I'm like, don't you make fun of a Fulci.
Yeah, that.
The zombie, that he come for you.
That death was a bit much.
It really was.
But then we zoom in on her ring. Now, here's the funny part. This scene makes no sense until much later. But like, when they just zoom in on her ring, I'm like, okay, what's the importance of the ring? Why do we care? Like,
it's Chekhov's ring.
Yes, it will make sense later. But we see the zombie hands grab her by the legs and drag her into the darkness of the basement. The door slams behind him. Cut to the outside of the house at morning. We get the title card and the opening credits and some really kick-ass music. The opening credit music is awesome. So I really enjoyed that music. But we zoom in on the window of the house. We see a young girl in the window looking scared. Freeze frame, it turns black and white, and then we transition and see that we're looking at a photo. We pan out to an apartment in New York City with Bob the Thumb staring at the photo. Now, while I hate Bob, I love that transition. That is such a cool shot. And that's the other thing about this film. There's a lot of great cinematography in this movie.
She doesn't want me to go, Mommy. Shut your fucking mouth.
And yeah, as Susie just alluded to, Lucy comes in the room and asks Bob if he's packed his toys yet. And he starts going on and on about how this girl in the photo doesn't want him to go to the house. She says that we shouldn't go there. And Lucy turns and looks at the photo, and there's no little girl in the photo. So she looks a little concerned. And then he goes, she must have had something to do. I think she left.
like, what the fuck does she have to do?
Yeah,
she has some ghost things to do, Mommy.
She has to go haunt another house.
Go haunt another photo. It's
like, she's gotta go with the lady. We don't know who she is until the very end.
The end that makes no fucking sense.
But well, it doesn't matter because Bob just...
I have a feeling that throughout this entire movie, Bob is going to be constantly brought up. He's
you know I don't write down a lot of quotes. That's your thing. This is an exception.
Yeah, Bob is terrible.
Bob is the load that should have been swallowed.
Very much.
Many times over again. Like, just relax your throat. Just let it happen.
Oh, that's horrible.
Well, so is he.
Oh my god. So Lucy and Bob leave the room, and then we pan back to the photo once more, and we see the little girls in the window again looking frightened. Transition to outside the house by the cemetery, where we see the little girl standing in the yard watching the house. We find out her name is May, and it says New Whitby, Boston. And a woman calls for her, telling her it's time to go, and May refuses, saying, I can't go now, it's important. And then we just smash cut to the New York Historical Society.
I can't go now, you see? There's much importance here going on.
It's important, damn it. And we see Norman Boyle and one of his colleagues walking out of the building discussing how Norman is picking up the research of his friend and mentor, Eric Peterson, who was researching suicide and then killed his mistress and committed suicide himself.
Oh.
I love this, though, because the conversation ends with his colleague just going, taxi! Taxi! Like, the voice was hilarious. His Norman's colleague gets in the taxi and tells him, I'll come for a visit after school is through. Goodbye. Like, his voice was great.
I'm going to continue to fuck students because no one can prove otherwise.
You see? But we cut to the Boyles loading up their car for the move. And Lucy tells Norman that he should have went and paid his condolences to the widow of Eric Peterson. And he says to her, what do you say to a widow whose husband had another woman, and one fine day he slaughtered that other woman and then hanged himself? We just zoom in on Lucy's concerned face while this weird buzzing music plays, and then smash cut to happy music, and the Boyles are on their way to the house by the cemetery.
I gotta say, throughout this whole movie, you would have music, then all of a sudden cut to nothing. So I kept on thinking like the movie was cutting out.
The weirdest fucking soundtrack, man. It's so strange.
That's a Fulci for you.
You know, it definitely is, but like some of his other movies don't have such a discordant soundtrack.
They don't.
You know, it's like the music is strange, but it's not so jarring where it just like stops abruptly. It's like, what? But we cut to May staring creepily at a storefront display of mannequins. Two women and a boy. She looks at them like a confused dog. And then we cut to the Boyles arriving in New Whitby. Somebody, I think it was Norman.
Did you just say New Whippy? Like Whippy?
Whitby. Whitby.
New Whippy! That's just, I just want it to be that.
Yeah, well, okay, so it's New Whippy.
Whippy!
But Norman goes, I love this because the car, she's a little station wagon driving through, and you just hear him go, smell that country air. Like, it just sounded like a commercial.
For, like, I expected, like, Marlboro cigarettes to be, like, lit up after that.
It's just weird. But back to May at the window, where she sees one of the mannequins get decapitated, and it falls over bleeding, and she begins crying, saying, no, don't do it. Like, she's clearly got The Shining.
Yep.
We cut back to the Boyles in the car. They stop at a real estate agency, and Bob says in his creepy voice, will you get me some candy? Where? It's a real estate agency.
Maybe if you're good after dinner.
And then the realtor is like, well, you get the keys to the Frankenstein house. But then after that, she keeps, every time you go back to that realtor's office, mm-hmm. She calls it something else, like Hillcrest, or...
No, it was Oak Mansion.
Oak Mansion, or, like, Dallas, or Dove's Landing.
Falcon Crest.
Falcon Crest, all my children.
Now, usually we would say simpler times for leaving the kid in the car by himself, but...
They didn't want that fucking kid with them. Right. And I don't goddamn blame them.
I think they were hoping he got kidnapped.
And I don't goddamn blame them.
Doors were unlocked. There was a sign that says, please take. Strapped to the outside of the car.
Please take him. Car is unlocked. Please take child.
But they meet with the realtor and begin signing the paperwork. And she goes on and on about how they haven't had much time to clean. But the previous owner was very neat. And then she goes... Did they tell you it was the same? They did tell you it was the same house, didn't they? And then she goes, poor Dr. Peterson. He's been there such a short while. Then she stops and looks at Norman and says, of course, you've been there before, haven't you, Dr. Boyle? And now this is something that was never resolved, and it bugs the shit out of me.
Mm-hmm.
He looks all sheepish and goes, no, while his wife eyeballs him and the realtor looks confused. Now this comes up again, and it bugs the hell out of me because they don't resolve it. So it's like, why is this here? But the realtor tells another employee, which we find out is Harold, to get the keys. And he goes, what keys? Ah, Freudstein keys. And she goes, Oak Mansion, Harold. He goes, oh, yeah, sure, Oak Mansion. Like, his voice was great.
Like, yeah, Oak Mansion, you see?
So she gives him the keys and tells him that she's sure they'll like the place. Out in the car, Bob hears May talking to him from across the street and is totally fine with it. With a
fucking creepy ass doll.
Right. But I was more creeped out by the fact that she's standing like a block away. You're in a car with the windows rolled up. The little girl starts talking to you and you're just like, oh, hey, how's it going? Like, don't you find it a bit strange?
No, because Bob is a fucking weird kid. He's a dumbass. That's it. That's all we got to know.
I love it, though, because she goes from being all happy. She's like, hi, I'm May. And then suddenly being like, I thought I told you very clearly not to come here, bitch, Bob.
Bitch, boy, Bob.
You like that name? Because that's what I'm going to call you, you little bitch, Bob, because you a bitch.
Stop, my back still hurts. I did a lot of walking yesterday. It really hurts. Bitch, boy, Bob. What's my name, bitch? I hear you're looking for bitch boy Bob.
I hear you're looking for bitch boy Bob.
You're looking for bitch boy Bob, bitch.
Oh boy. Before this episode is over, I'm just going to go on record as saying I think we're going to say bitch the most times in any Boogeyman's Closet episode ever.
It is very, very likely. Oh, because Bob is just a little bitch boy.
So, bitch boy Bob the Thumb tells her that he tried to stop his parents, but they wouldn't listen. He goes,
Parents never listen!
Oh, he sucks.
Oh, he's such a little bitch! I just want to fucking hit him with a shoe. I want to hit him with a shoe.
Well, That's why later on when he gets grabbed by the face, it looked so rough because all the actors were like, I want to just throw this kid around.
Make him look normal. We thought it was deformed, you see?
With his Billy Bass mouth.
He has some dick-sucking lips. Oh, I'm in such pain.
That's not good. Oh, but so the Boyles head out to the car with the realtor who tells them to follow her up to the new place. Lucy notices Bob is missing, and then Norman calmly points to him sitting across the street that he has and he suddenly has a creepy doll, the doll that May was holding.
Isn't the doll naked at this point?
No, it's still got a dress on.
Okay, it was a flesh-colored dress. Hello, Clarice.
Lucy comes over to get him, and she scolds him for leaving the car. He desperately tries to tell her about May, but Lucy is talking over him and how he shouldn't have left the car. But he's like, there's a girl here! She's my girlfriend!
No one wants to be a girlfriend, Bob. I promise you that.
He moves on. He moves quick.
Yeah, he does. But so we cut to the Boyles at their new home, thanking the realtor, who tells them that she'll have the phone hooked up Friday, and as soon as she gets back to town, she'll get them that babysitter. She then gets in her car and backs over a tombstone and goes, damn tombstones. And I'm like, wait, what?
They're just there.
Yeah, but she's just like running over someone's final resting place. Like, ah, fuck them. Yeah.
They should have been buried there.
Should have been
very inconvenient for her.
But Lucy takes a good look at the house and tells him that it looks exactly like the one in the photo back in New York. And he tells her that's very possible, as it's a good example of the local architecture, and writes off her concern completely. So we cut to the family fixing up the house. Bob is playing with his car and won't shut the fuck up for this entire scene. Oh my god.
Oh my god, Bob, I'm gonna fucking kill you.
So for those of you that haven't seen this, this entire scene, there's an entire scene that plays out with Lucy and Norman. And in the background, all you hear is Bob going, vroom, 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 vroom. Like, oh my god, it drove me batty. I couldn't stand this sequence.
I wanted to drown him.
Yes. I wanted Freudstein to pull him through the floor into the basement. And just kill him.
At that moment. Freudstein was probably like, oh, I cannot wait for the end of this movie. Because Freudstein is Bane in the Harley Quinn cartoon.
I think he was avoiding Bob because he's like, I don't want to deal with this little bastard.
I don't want to talk to this kid. kid is nothing but a pain in my ass.
Lucy and Norman argue. She tells him that she and Bob should have stayed in New York. He tells her that they agreed to look at this move like a vacation, that he'd work for the next 6 months, and her and Bob can enjoy the new town and go out and see the sights. She gets snarky and goes, oh yeah, what a lovely area to see the sights in. And then she picks
up... You dumbass bitch. He paid for everything.
Right. Well, I mean...
He's not even having an affair on you.
She's not wrong, though. Like, he moved them into a house by the cemetery that's haunted by a monster. So, you know, it doesn't turn out well for either of them.
Well, that's really not his fault. He didn't know that.
Well, maybe he shouldn't have been hooked up with weirdos. She then picks up May's doll and looks worried. Norman asks her what's wrong, saying it's only a doll. She suddenly throws it and yells, Bob's always bringing this trash home! It's like, all right.
Wow, it's like she's Nancy from the Broadway play Oliver. The kindly hooker. The kindly sex worker.
Norman tells her to take her pills, and she flips out telling him that she doesn't want to take them, and that she read that they can provoke hallucinations. Norman just stares at her ominously. Again, this is all stuff that's set up like, we're setting up Norman to be kind of a like in on all this. Like he's fucking with his wife. He's been there before. And none of it pans out. And it drives me crazy.
But yeah, because there's all this setup and like no payoff.
Right. It drives me nuts. But he talks about how quaint the house is and pats the boarded up door saying, "This must be the basement." And Lucy tells him, "Yeah, they had it boarded up. How quaint." And he asks if she wants him to open it, and she tells him to go fix the other rooms first, that she wants to sleep in a real bed tonight, so work on the bedroom. And Lucy begins putting things away in the kitchen when suddenly Bob's car crashes into someone new. Pan up to reveal Anne the babysitter just standing in their house.
Fucking... Oh, with her fucking eyelashes. They're like mutant eyelashes.
Yeah, they really are.
She had the false eyelashes before they were a thing. Mm-hmm. So when she has her eyelashes and she blinks, they like extend like tentacles. And then they wrap around her prey and suck the life out of them.
Like a Venus flytrap?
Or maybe that's another movie.
But we pan up and look at Anne's face, and she very much looks like the decapitated mannequin from earlier. But just in case you couldn't tell, they splice images of the decapitated mannequin into this scene to remind you. We cut to that night. Lucy is in bed, and we hear the slow thudding footsteps, which turns out to just be Norman. The sound design in this movie is crazy. And I'm like,
oh God.
Why?
Well, at least he doesn't just like jump into bed and be like, "It's late and I'm slushed."
Right, but like, why was his foot? Why were his footsteps so fucking dramatic? the footsteps in this movie, like, no matter where you are in the house, they sound like they're right behind you and super loud. But so Norman is doing some research while Lucy sleeps. He opens a folder labeled Freudstein, but it's empty. He hears creaking floorboards and a child crying in the distance, along with raspy, heavy breathing. He's very slow to go and investigate, though. Like, what the fuck took him so long to go check on his kid? You hear a kid crying.
Cocaine.
You hear floorboards creaking and some heavy breathing, like some kind of monster is in the fucking house. Like, why are you just sitting there like, huh?
It's, well, cocaine. It was 1981.
I don't think it was cocaine. I feel like he was like, well, maybe it'll eat bitch Bob. Maybe we won't have to deal with him anymore.
He's like, if I close my eyes and I count to 10, it will eat my bitch child.
But Norman finally gets up to go check on Bob. And I don't understand this scene because he pulls Bob's covers back, straightens the kid's legs, smiles, and then covers him back up again.
He's like, oh, God damn it.
Why did you straighten his legs out? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
In his little fucking Care Bears pajamas.
But then he hears loud creaking again and runs off to investigate. He opens the kitchen door and finds Anne the babysitter prying the boards off the cellar door and simply says, "Anne." And then we get 30 seconds of close-up shots on their eyes.
And they're just like... like having a stare off, a staring contest.
It's like back and forth between Anne's eyes, Norman's eyes, Anne's eyes. And then nobody says anything more. And Norman just walks away without saying anything. And I'm like, what just happened? So
we don't know. We're left not knowing.
And we never find out. But we cut to an exterior shot of the ominous house at night and smash cut to the next day, where Lucy and Norman are talking about, or are talking outside of the library or university. Where was it, a university that he was going to? He was going to the library in it, but I'm assuming it was a university of some kind.
It was La Escuela. That's it. It was just La Escuela.
While they're standing out there, they see the realtor, Miss Gittleson.
I thought you were going to say they see mittens.
No, they do not see mittens. They see Miss Gittleson. And Lucy waves at her saying hi. Gittleson sees her and looks away without saying anything. Lucy looks offended.
She gets so fucking offended. She's like, that bitch dissed me.
Well,
or maybe she didn't see me at all.
Well, Norman goes, maybe she didn't see you. And she's like, maybe she did it on purpose. It's like, and Norman goes, maybe you need glasses. Like, she.
I'm gonna tell you, bitches are fucking vicious. She probably was like, "You be living in a haunted house? I don't want nothing to do with you, bitch."
But he asks her,
"The power of Christ compels you."
He asks her if everything is okay now, and she tells him that she's fine, and now that she knows that Anne is watching Bitch Bob, she feels better. And I wrote, yeah, I don't have to listen to
his fucking... I wouldn't feel better.
She's like, I don't have to listen to his fucking voice all day. But Norman promises her... Oh, man. So Norman promises her a candlelit dinner later. And the two part ways. So cut to Norman talking to Professor Wheatley about Dr. Peterson in Peterson's old office. Wheatley asks Peterson, what Peterson wanted to tell him when he came for a visit with his daughter. And Norman looks at him and says, I've never set foot in this town before, and I have a son, not a daughter. And Wheatley goes, are you sure? Which it's like, no, I'm not sure. I'm sorry, but my son maybe is a daughter. Who knows? Like, what?
I mean, well.
Oh, my God. But so this is the second time someone has accused Norman of being in the town, you know, having come there before. But he acts suspicious and is like, I've never been here. Why is this in the movie? Like, it drives me crazy.
Because it goes nowhere.
Right.
I hear you came to the town before, you see?
It's like, no, I didn't. They're like, oh, are you sure? But then...
All right, well, we'll drop it.
Old precious Daniel Douglas walks in the room with the professor.
Oh, my God. This kid, his teeth drive me crazy.
Wheatley tells Norman that if he needs any books or documents, Douglas is the one to help him. And Douglas tells him that everything in the office is the way that Peterson left it. I didn't dare move any of his files around. And Douglas asks if he'll be continuing Peterson's research, and he tells him that he will be. And Douglas then shows him the file boxes with medical reports, death certificates, and missing persons reports. Norman asks Douglas why Peterson needed all that, and he's like, oh, I'm not sure. Like, I was like, what the fuck? It was so random. So Douglas asks if he knows anything about it. And, like, you know, do you know anything about his private research? And he's like, no. Yeah, or Norman tells him no. But knowing Peterson, it was probably something interesting. Douglas goes to leave and is like, oh, by the way, Peterson hung himself from that railing right there.
And then they make a point to, like, do a close-up on it, like, dun-dun-dun.
Yeah, they zoom in on it. Like, Norman looks, and they're like, meow, wow, 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 make this weird sound. Oh. But we cut to Bob playing amongst the tombstones because Bob is an idiot. And
May.
Well, we don't know that May's there yet. We just see Bob like prancing through the graveyard.
Like and a little goth kid that looks like a thumb.
We see the name on one of the tombstones is Mary Freudstein. We zoom in on the little photo inlaid in the stone. And then this is where May comes up and tells him that she was the wife of Dr. Freudstein and the tombstone is a lie. She's not really buried there. And then back to Norman going through Peterson's files. He finds one about Freudstein being banned from practicing medicine ever again. Now we cut to Lucy finding the hidden and very dirty tombstone or tomb of Jacob Tess Freudstein in the floor under a rug. And I'm like, as much as I laughed at them literally hiding him under a rug, it's still creepy as fuck to find a tombstone in your floor.
Like,
I'm like, they swept the doctor under the rug. Womp womp.
Literally.
But suddenly she hears banging and growling coming from another room and goes to investigate. Now, I had to make a comment here. She's wearing a white shirt and clearly no bra. I was like, it must be cold in there. The camera focused pretty strongly. But... she goes into the kitchen calling out for Bob. And Bob.
What's
and
he Aunt. Gonna fucking do?
Well, right. Well, I think because she's. I think she's wondering if Bob or Ann were making the noise because she's, you know, calling out, you know, Bob, Ann, anybody there. And there's much more noise now. The basement door also begins to rattle, and there's a crying child. There's more growling and what sounds like plate shattering. Lucy cradles herself and begins screaming. Cut to outside, we see Norman arriving home, and then he walks in and starts calling out for Lucy because she has some splaining to do. Because he's like, Lucy!
Hello?
He goes to go upstairs and hears sobbing coming from behind him, so he turns around and we see Lucy huddled against the wall crying. He runs over to find out what's wrong with her. He hugs her, she cries, and then we cut to pills on a nightstand and Lucy asleep in bed. Norman...
He's like, I'm just gonna drug her, you see?
Basically. Then Norman pulls the curtains open and wakes her up. And apparently the magic pills fixed everything because she's all better. And like, oh, it's okay that I found a tombstone in my floor. I'm good now.
But, I've come to terms with it. I don't need no stinking therapies.
The pills fixed me. But we cut to Lucy and Norman walking through the house talking. She wants to get a different house, saying that she can handle living next to a cemetery, but having a tomb in the hallway is a bit much.
That's where I draw the line.
I think that would be okay. I mean, I think it would lower the value of the house, so then I would get it cheaper.
You could not pay me to live in a house with a tombstone on the floor. I've seen far too many horror movies.
Come on, Mike. Polly Prissy Pants.
I'm going to be a little bitch Bob here. I ain't going.
All right, little bitch Bob. Would you come over and visit me, though?
Yes, as long as I wasn't staying for the night, I'd be good.
If your car mysteriously wouldn't start and your phone mysteriously stopped working.
Looks like I'm walking home.
That's like 15 miles to Niagara Falls from my house.
I'll get home the next day, but I'll get home. Oh, man. But so they're walking through the house talking about, you know, her wanting a new house. And he goes on to tell her that this isn't New York and most of the houses have tombs in them because, sorry at this part, most of the houses have tombs in them because around here, when it's winter, the ground freezes. So you bury Grandpa at home. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, he thaws out in the spring.
I've never heard this concept before in my life. We're gonna bury people in the house because it's cold outside.
It's
cold outside.
Bury me in the floor, baby. It's cold.
It's cold outside.
Oh my god! I mean, I had to pause the movie. I was crying. I was laughing so hard at that. Oh man! But just then, Bob and Ann come home. And Bob tells Bob and Dan, my girlfriend says hi. Lucy asks Anne if she saw the girl that Bob was talking about. And she tells her no. And she goes, well, weren't you with him? And she goes, I was all the time. So now Lucy looks at Bob like something ain't right with that boy.
Because Lucy's thinking like, who the fuck would love that thumb looking motherfucker?
She's like, I'm his mom, and even I don't love him.
She's like, I'm obligated to love him. I don't love him.
We now get a weird three-way close-up of Norman's eyes looking at Anne, Lucy looking at Norman, who looks away, Anne looking at Lucy. Lucy looks back at Anne, and she looks away. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Why do we keep zooming in on the eyes?
Because there's no eye trauma, so they have to freak you out with the eye close-ups.
I mean, that makes as good a sense as any, because, again, none of this is resolved. But, oh my god. So, Norman finds the keys for the basement door. So he tries to unlock it, and, whoa, oh, chair.
Sorry, that was my chair.
I said he tried to unlock it and went,
it was Bob.
That little fucking bitch.
if Bob is in Susie's house, Susie has to worry.
But he's like, he has to get like something to like pry the key.
It was a knife, because he gets the right key in the door, and he's turning it with considerable effort, but he can't quite get it. So he sticks the knife through like the loop of the key at the end and starts using it, you know, to pry the door. And this is another one of those cool cinematography shots, because we see the tumbler inside the lock, like clicking free with considerable effort. Like all this like dust and debris is coming off of each tumbler. So I thought that was cool. But Norman and Lucy make their way into the basement after they get the door open.
God. And she's like, fucking Lucy's like, do you see anything? And he's like, just some old steps going down, you dumb fucking bitch.
So Norman slowly shuffles down the stairs and he ends up kicking something metal. He reaches down to find out it's the ring of Tits McGee from the beginning of the film. He pockets it and is attacked by a rubber bat. Lucy runs down to see why he's screaming, and the bat attacks her.
This is probably the longest bat scene I've ever seen.
And then, like, yeah, bitch, you deserve bats in your fucking belfry. And then he's got a bat on his hand, and it bites him. And he's got rabies now, so he takes, like, fucking scissors and stabs the bat, and it's such a fucking long death. Like,
but before that, when she runs down, the bat flies into her hair and Norman just stands there staring at her. Like, he doesn't help. She's just screaming, wah, wah, wah. The bat's fucking fluttering around screeching, and Norman's just looking at her, and we close in on his eyes again.
Like, That's true.
I thought the bat was eating her hair. That's what it looked like to me.
I mean, it pretty much
should have eaten her fucking soul. Dumb bitch. Should have eaten Bob's soul.
He then finally saunters over and grabs the bat, and it bites his hand, and he goes running upstairs as if he's being led by the bat. Because, like, he's holding his hand out. It's still fluttering. It's flapping its wings while gnawing on his hand. And then he runs out into the kitchen, and Bob yells, Daddy, Daddy, what's the matter? And it's like, oh, nothing, Bob. Dad's hand always has wings. What the fuck?
Fucking hate Bob. Little thumb-looking motherfucker.
So he gets the silverware drawer open, which for some reason has surgical scissors in it. He then stabs the bat repeatedly. Bob looks terrified. Lucy looks hysterical. And Anne looks like she's on horse tranquilizers. And then Norman proceeds to flail around with the bleeding bat still attached to his hand. He spatters Bob in the face with blood, and I lost it. Because his expression drops. And it's almost like you could hear, hello, darkness, my old friend. He is traumatized at that point. Norman pries the shrieking bat off his hand. It hits the floor and dies.
I'm hearing Simon and Garfunkel now in my head. Hello, darkness, my old friend.
But seriously, watch that scene again with that thought in your head and look at the expression on Bob's face, the way it just drops.
I don't want to watch Bob's face ever again. No, that's a lie. I like this movie a lot, so I'll probably watch it again.
You know you'll watch it. But we cut to the family at the real estate agency talking to Harold, who is clearly bored as fuck, as he keeps yawning while talking to them. They tell him that they want a different house, and he's like, yeah, all right.
She's like, we must move out no later than tomorrow.
And I did note, for once, Bob is quiet. I think he's still scarred from the bat blood. And he's
still digesting it.
Well, he's just sitting in the background, just not moving and not making a sound.
Yeah, because he's like, Mommy, I feel weird.
I think he's still hearing Simon and Garfunkel. But
it's down to Cecilia. You're breaking my heart.
Oh, man. But yeah, so Harold mutters to himself that he'll have Miss Gittleson stop by that evening. The Boyles leave, and he mutters to himself again, that Freudstein house. And then we cut to Miss Gittleson going through houses and talking to Harold. He tells her that there's always going to be a problem with the Freudstein house. She corrects him by saying, it's Oak Mansion. And he goes, yeah, yeah, give the bad product a new label. Call it what you will. It'll always be the Freudstein house. And we cut to May in a room full of dolls. A woman comes over to her and asks what she's doing by the window. And she tells her she's watching the house, to which the woman responds, you can't see it from here. And then she goes, it's time for bed. Now get in bed. And then May looks at the camera and says, don't go inside. Not inside. Then we cut to Miss Gittleson by the house. And she lets herself in. She looks around.
So here's a problem. So she has rented this house out. There mm-hmm. are tenants there. The realtor cannot legally enter the house without permission. So she can't ring the bell and be like, oh, nobody's answering. I'm just going to let myself in.
Well, Italians don't know that.
Just like, they're like, hey, everybody's welcome. It's a me, it's a Mario.
It's a me, your realtor. But
so it's like a video game, Luigi's Mansion.
Exactly.
We're seeing your house. It's haunted. It's a
now
me.
That's I'm what I want to see. I want to see a Luigi's Mansion where he fights Dr. Freudstein. That would be fucking awesome. But so she lets herself in, starts looking around, calling for Mrs. Boyle and Anne. No one responds, but we see someone watching her, like a POV shot. She goes to leave and then hears someone moving nearby. So she turns and sees the shadow of a person, like, kind of moving across the living room. She goes to investigate, and her leg breaks through the Freudstein tomb and gets caught. She screams.
Okay.
Okay.
That tomb has been intact for how fucking long?
Mm-hmm.
And fucking Lucy, not Lawless, is like, damn it, why is this on my living room floor? And then all of a sudden, it's Luigi, walks into the Luigi's mansion. And now her foot breaks through and she's like, help me, I can't get out, I'm Luigi. And now the ghost comes.
Pretty much. Well, I don't know. He's not really a ghost.
Well, that's true. He's Dr. Satan.
Exactly. But she screams, the lights go out, and we get a POV shot of a zombified hand grabbing a fire poker and then coming towards Miss Gittleson, who looks horrified. The creature starts to stab her, like, slowly, too. Like, he's just stabbing her slowly in the chest and digging the poker around. And she's just like, you know, moaning and groaning. And he pulls the poker out, stabs her again. He's basically fucking her with the poker.
Well, he wants to make sure he does her good.
Apparently. And then he stabs her in the neck. And now this is a great effect shot. He stabs her in the neck. And when he pulls the poker back out, we get this geyser of blood in kind of a slow motion shot. It looks really cool.
It's a very 80s. Mm-hmm. Effect,
but it's definitely
very effective.
Yeah, it looks great. And then we cut to the zombie dragging her corpse away, which is now way worse off than it was a second ago. Her eye is fucked up and it looks like her head was bashed in. And while she's dragged into the basement, we hear a child whimpering. So we keep hearing that little kid whimpering sound. Now, we cut to the next day. We see a shot of the exterior of the house. And again, I fucking love this house. It's a gorgeous house. But there's a random cat sleeping on one of the tombstones, which we zoom in on. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure they just saw a random black cat on a tombstone. And we're like, roll footage. Roll. Like, because it has absolutely nothing to do with anything, but they zoom in on it like it's important.
We're never going to get this again. Do it now.
So then we cut inside and we see Anne scrubbing up the blood trail from Miss Gittleson. Lucy comes in yawning and says good morning. Lucy calmly asks what she's doing and Anne just goes, I made coffee. And she goes, really? No, I'm sorry. She made coffee and I'm like, really? you're not at all curious what the big red stain on your wooden floor is. Like, you know, that's not coffee, clearly. Lucy then starts rambling about what a shame it is that Anne couldn't come out to dinner with them the night before and how her parents must have been thrilled to see her. And then she asks, do you live far from here? She never answers it. She doesn't even finish scrubbing. Like, she just stands there staring at her. We zoom in on her eyes again. Like, we get no answers and another eye zoom in from Lucy.
It's because this movie doesn't have eye trauma, so it's the eye zoom in.
Right. But still, it's just, it's fucking random. But, so I'm like, also, you know nothing about this woman. Like, where do you live? You know, like, why are you cleaning blood off my floor? Why do we keep looking at your eyes? But they know nothing about her, and they're like, just here, watch my kid. It's so fucking weird. So, cut to Lucy bringing coffee to Norman, and she tells him that Anne is a real weirdo, and she can't get a word out of her. And Norman is like, like, he's not even paying attention. And she asks him if he's found anything interesting in his research, and he tells her that Peterson was reading up on Dr. Freudstein, a turn-of-the-century surgeon with a penchant for illegal experiments. She then asks what that has to do with Peterson's work, and he tells her that as far as he can tell, nothing. And his best guess is that Peterson was already going off the deep end when he started reading into him. So Norman tells her here that he has to take a trip to New York to get Mueller's okay to follow up on a hunch, which he believes Dr. Peterson's suicide was directly linked to the research of Freudstein. And I'm like, do phones not exist? Like, you have to go to New York to get permission to do this? You can't call him? I mean, it is 1981. Like,
pretty sure it costs too much to call long distance.
That's true. Gas was much cheaper. So he can drive up there. Oh, my God. So we cut to Norman at the university looking all shifty-eyed. He begins rifling through the files and then hears very loud footsteps coming toward him. Again, with the sound design in this movie. And the door opens and it's just old Precious Doug who looks surprised to find Norman there. And
he's I'm just surprised to see you on a Sunday.
Like, yeah, he goes, what are you doing here? And he goes, like, well, my responsibilities are to check the library on our off hours when we're closed. Like, when the way he says when we're closed, it just looks at Norman like, get the fuck out. But so Doug sheepishly, you know, walks away. And he's like, oh, okay, I'll leave you to your research. And he leaves. And then once again, Norman looks at the place where Peterson hung himself and we do the zoom in. Now we smash cut to Bob running through the grounds, looking back over his shoulder, terrified. He trips and looks up at Mary Freudstein's grave, and then May grabs him, exclaiming, I got you! And it's like, aw, they were just playing tag. So he wasn't being chased by a murderous monster after all.
Gotcha.
And then Bob tells her that he has to go back inside since his mom still thinks he's napping, and she'll be mad if she catches him outside playing. And May tells him, don't go in there, don't go inside. And he's like, oh, I'll just go in for a minute, then I'll sneak back out. And she tells him to meet him to meet her under the old oak tree. He agrees and goes in. Then May suddenly says, no, Bob, don't go inside. I warned you not to. And it's like, oh, okay. Then she looks back at the grave of Mary Freudstein while very strange and discordant music plays. Like, this whole sequence seems really bizarre. But we cut to Norman going through the files where he finds a tape recorder and a cassette tape. And I was like, don't play it. You don't ever play the cassette tape in a horror movie. That's not good at all. So, of course, he plays the tape. And it says, Klaatu Barada Nikto and summons the dead. No, actually, it's... it's
Peterson here, you see?
And I'm going to say, Klaatu Barada Nikto. But yeah, Peterson tells him, you know, or Peterson's on the tape saying that he can't eat, he can't sleep since he started his research. He's seeing things and hearing things in the Freudstein house. He's
like, and Shayla, she's going to come and eat my dick.
Well, he's like, it draws me in, it frightens me, and Sheila doesn't believe me. Now we get a POV shot outside the house, wandering in. We see blood pouring from the Freudstein tomb and down into the basement where we see strewn body parts, all while Peterson's hysterical voice is droning on and on asking how many more will be drawn into the house, how many more will die. That he, you know, he's like, I must know all the mysteries of this. We zoom in on a mangled corpse tit, and Peterson screams, "Do you believe me now, Sheila?" And I just lost my shit because we see like a torso with a missing titty, and he yells, "Do you believe me now, Sheila?" And I'm like, "Oh, dude, you ripped her boob off." We then zoom in on the body of a small boy, and he yells, "No, not the children." And we cut to Bob playing with his car with his dumb voice.
Oh, my God. Vroom, vroom, vroom. I'd like to fucking vroom that right down your goddamn throat.
Yep. Pretty much. And then back at the library, Norman ejects the tape and burns it. And I'm like, what the fuck you up to? So he leaves the university looking all shifty-eyed, and May watches him go. Back at the house, Bob annoyingly plays, and Anne comes upstairs, and we zoom in on her eyes again, because it's Anne, and that's all we do with her. She doesn't speak, we just look at her eyes.
And she does really have lovely eyelashes, I will say that.
But at this point, I'm sick of looking at her eyes.
Like, I don't think they really needed to give her mascara. Like, in the early 80s, all right, I'm done. I'm just a girl admiring another girl's beauty.
But, yeah, it's just weird with the eye thing. So we cut to Lucy coming out of the grocery store. She sees Norman's car and just says, "Norman." And he passes by.
And then that goddamn asshole drives past her. She's like, "Norman, I'll just keep walking home with these bags of groceries."
I'm not gonna call him an asshole. He was driving by with the windows up, and she just goes, "Norman," in a normal speaking voice. How the fuck he gonna hear you?
I'm sorry. See you. My husband, okay, he has tattoos, but if he were walking down the side of the road in jeans and a hoodie, I would still say I would recognize him.
See, I don't pay attention to like the pedestrians walking on the sidewalk when I'm driving in the road, though. Like,
well, you should, because what if you're in Niagara Falls? What if one of those motherfuckers jump out in front of your car?
Right, if they're in the road.
Is going to say, "Well, you paid attention to those motherfuckers."
Eyes on the road. Eyes on the road. If they're in the road, yes. If they're coming out of a store, no. I'm driving. I'm not looking off to the side like, "Hey, look at that person."
I don't know. I think, I don't know. Aunt Lucy's like, "Hey, Nort." Oh, okay. I'll keep walking home in these I wasn't wearing good shoes to do this today. And that's fucking on her.
Right. I still say it's all on her, because you don't talk in a normal volume as someone's driving by and expect them to hear you.
So you're saying she should have like thrown her groceries down on the ground, been jumping up and down like, "Norman!"
I mean, that's better than just going, "Norman," while the windows are rolled up.
Excuse me, Norman.
She basically wanted her red stapler back. You know, I mean, it was that quiet.
My God.
But then, and here, I'm going to go further and say Lucy's the fucking dumbass here, because then she walks out into fucking traffic and forces another car to stop. I was like, you entitled bitch. Like, she just wanders out into traffic and a car has to stop in the road. Oh, man. So back at the house, Bob races his car into the kitchen and suddenly loses sight of it. He goes into the kitchen after it and sees the basement door is open. Anne comes in looking for him, calling out his name, and she hears a child crying. She heads into the kitchen and sees the basement door open, so she goes in calling out for Bob. We see a POV shot of someone watching her from the shadows, and I was like, she heads down into the basement. That'll be funny in a minute, folks. And she follows the crying sounds. Suddenly the door closes behind her. She rushes back up the stairs, begins pounding on the door, screaming for Bob to open it. In the basement, we see a hand holding a knife and like coming toward her. Back upstairs, Bob hears her. He tells his stuffed monkey they need to go rescue her. And he grabs his monkey and his little pink pistol. And he heads off toward the kitchen.
Like, this what's he fucking gonna... kid.
Back in the basement, the person with the knife, you know, slowly comes up behind Anne and slashes at her neck repeatedly. Bob marches down into the kitchen and the basement door opens up. He suddenly looks scared and makes his way down into the basement. Suddenly behind him, he hears something thudding down the stairs. He turns and sees Anne's severed head bouncing down.
Which sounds like a basketball.
It really does.
It really did. Now, Bob shrieks, and I lost my shit laughing.
Oh, my God, because he is screaming like someone is burning his bum.
Someone lit his asshole on fire.
Yep.
He then runs upstairs, and the door closes. He scoots through just in time, but gets his hand stuck and continues to scream. We get another POV shot of something coming upstairs toward him. We see a zombie hand reach out to grab him. And Bob gets his hand out just in time and runs off. So now Lucy comes home with the groceries and calls out for Bob and Anne to come help her. She heads into the kitchen, hears whimpering. She looks around and finds Bob crying in the corner of his bedroom. Now this cracks
me up. Of course she does.
But this cracks me up. She's in the basement. Or I'm sorry, she's in the kitchen by the basement. And she hears whimpering, like quiet, soft whimpering. And she follows the whimpering. Right, but she follows the whimpering upstairs, which never gets any louder, and she goes into his room, and I'm like, man, fucking sound really carries in this house. And, you know, she sees him sobbing, so she runs over and grabs him and asks what happened, and he tells her that Anne is dead, that she was...
Anne lost her head!
And of course she doesn't believe him, and he insists it's all true. So we cut to them going down in the basement with a flashlight. They look around, and there's no head there. Bob swears to his mom that it's true, but she clearly doesn't believe him. Suddenly, we see some creepy-ass eyes straight out of a Tom and Jerry cartoon open up in the darkness.
That's what I wrote, too! Tom and Jerry eyes.
That was straight up out of a cartoon. We hear a crash upstairs, and they both go running back up to find absolutely nothing. And I'm like, what is constantly breaking in this house?
But then, you know what makes everything better? A big gulp of milk. Thanks, well, Mommy.
That's coming up, because we now cut to Norman in the cemetery, and this is where the caretaker runs up, and he's like, what you doing here, pal?
That's right.
And Norman's like, I'm not your pal, friend. And he's like, I'm not your friend, guy. He goes... He tells me he's looking for Freudstein's tomb. And I'm like, wait.
It's in your fucking living room, you dumbass.
Exactly. I'm like, why would you be looking for Freudstein's tomb if you know it's in your fucking living room? Like, this... Oh, that drove me crazy.
You dumb.
But the caretaker tells him it's all rumors. There's no Freudstein there. And Norman tells him that the official records say that he is. The caretaker goes, that's a lot of bunk. And he goes, besides, the cemetery's closed today. You need to leave. So now this is where we cut to Bob in bed with the milk.
Yes. Yes, because everything is better with a big gulp of milk.
And then Lucy tells him that Anne will come back. You'll see. She's probably just visiting her parents. Bob shakes his head slowly. No. And I'm like, now wait, let's just pretend for a moment Lucy is right. Wouldn't you be pissed as hell that your kid's babysitter just up and left for a visit with her parents while you weren't home? Like,
right?
I mean, that does. Lucy's an idiot. Lucy leaves.
She's a dumb fucking bitch.
Yep. But Lucy leaves and Bob lays awake in bed. So now we cut to Bob sneaking back downstairs with a flashlight, still dressed in the same clothes he was wearing earlier. So he goes into the basement once more and calls down the stairs. Anne, Mommy says you're not dead. Is that true? Right.
I wrote, stay the fuck in bed, you dumbass. Why are you... What? Also, why are his PJs a pair of jeans and a sweater?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, he got changed back into the clothes he was wearing because we saw him in his PJs. We saw him, like, kind of, like, his... Because I remember when he picked up the glass of milk. Like, we saw he was wearing pajamas.
Right. Mm-hmm. So he's a dumb fuck. He deserves everything he gets. Like, he doesn't deserve a family. He's a dumbass.
He's calling out for Anne, asking, you know, saying, "Mommy says you're not dead. Is that true?" And I'm like, "Yeah, kid, I have a detachable head, you dumb fuck."
What a fuck. Oh, I just want to fucking cut him.
So he goes down the stairs calling for Anne, and the door slams. Anne,
with my bitchy little voice.
And the door slams behind him. He then sees the cartoony eyes popping up all over the basement in the darkness, accompanied by moaning. He screams and runs to the door, yelling for his mom to let him out. Now, again, we get all these cartoony eyes. Who do they belong to? What
also,
are they?
Also, the moaning.
No idea.
It's not pleasurable.
What's right? that?
Well, how does he know it's not pleasurable moaning?
True.
I mean, but he is very young. He doesn't understand probably about the birds and the bees.
Yeah. But Lucy,
I'm turning this whole thing into Hellraiser.
Apparently. Lucy hears him and tries to let him out, but she can't get the door open. Lucy gets the key in the door, tries to open it while Bob screams. She finds the right key. The lock is sticking just like before. She tries to force it, and the key snaps. So now she wedges a knife in the door, trying to pry it open, and the knife snaps. All the while, Bob won't shut the fuck up. He's like, "What are you doing? Why won't you unlock the door? Bobby, help me open the door. Unlock it. I can't get out. There's something in here."
And she, before she even gets to the door, she's like, "Bob? Bob?" She's like looking around like, "Are you in the cupboard? Are you in the oven? The refrigerator? You're in the basement."
To be fair, he literally could have been anywhere in the house or the grounds with the way the sound carries in this movie. You know, he could have been upstairs in the bathroom for all we know. But upstairs
he shits his pants. Upstairs, that's one of the reasons why she probably hates him.
True. Upstairs behind Lucy, we see a shadow approaching. She turns and screams bloody murder, but it's just Norman. He runs over asking her what's the matter. Meanwhile, Bob is shitting his britches. See? I knew that was coming. As a zombie slowly walks up toward him. Norman grabs an axe. What the hell was that?
That was my best zombie impression.
Oh, God. It sounded like something was being dragged. I'm like... I literally thought you, like, dropped your mic or something.
No!
I was like, what the fuck am I hearing?
Nope, that was just
me. So, Norman grabs an axe and tells Bob to get away from the door, but right as he says that, the zombie grabs Bob's head and shoves it against the door. And Norman begins chopping. The blade comes through in front of Bob's face, and then behind Bob's head, and then somehow with enough force to chop through the door and cut off the zombie's arm that's holding Bob's head. It didn't make a lot of sense. While this is happening, Norman is explaining to Lucy how they need to get out of the house, that Freudstein is in the house, and that he's killed, that he's the one that killed Sheila, and Peterson killed himself because he discovered the truth. So Norman pulls the now bloody axe out of the door and begins hacking wildly at it once he sees the blood. In the basement, we see Bob lying on the floor while Freudstein sits in the shadows sobbing like a child. Bob opens his eyes, and Freudstein comes out of the shadows, and we finally get a good look at his shriveled mug. He looks like he's got a shrunken head, almost. Like, his face is all shriveled up.
He really does look like Dr. Satan. He kind of looks like Earl.
Yeah, but he does have the Dr. Satan mouth, because, like, it's like his mouth.
He does.
It's like it's fused together.
And the aviator goggles.
Yeah, but he doesn't have the goggles on. It's just like his eyes are sunken in like little holes.
Yes, but it almost looks like the aviator goggles.
Right. What were you going to say, Maurice?
And again, I say, where did all those eyeballs come from?
Exactly, because he don't have no fucking eyes. So, like,
from your mom.
It's so confusing. But cut to May sitting up in bed screaming. Then Bob gets up and screams, and he turns around and sees the hanging corpses of Anne and Miss Gittleson and some dude on a slab. And I'm like, are you Steve? Is that Steve I see? And then Freudstein slowly shambles toward Bob, who backs away from him. Norman finally gets the door open and tells Lucy he needs human victims to replenish his cells. That's how he stays alive. Freudstein grabs Bob by the face and just kind of mushes him, which cracked me up. And then Norman and Lucy arrive. Norman rushes Freudstein with the axe, but Freudstein grabs his hand and kind of bends it back, forcing him to drop the axe. Lucy cradles Bob, screaming. Norman grabs a knife and stabs Freudstein in the belly, causing doo-doo and maggots to spill out. I was like, that's just gross.
Oh my God, stop. Stop it.
They had to be spaghetti, right?
I don't know. It looked like
this is a knife. It looked like spaghetti.
Well, there were maggots crawling all over too. It was
doo-doo and maggots.
Oh,
it hurts me to laugh.
But Freudstein grabs.
I'm already broken though. Oh my God.
Oh shit.
Okay. Oh dang it. Concern it. All right. Ooh, okay. So
after that sequence, after the doo-doo and maggot sequence, Freudstein grabs Norman's throat and tears it out, killing him. So Lucy and Bob run up some other stairs toward the cracked tomb in the hallway, living room, whatever it was.
Come on now. Like, that fucking thumb is going to fit through that crack. And he's like, Mommy, I can't fit. My head is too big. Well, you should never have been born.
Well, Lucy's desperately trying to pry the slab open. And Freudstein slowly comes up behind her, grabs her by the leg, and drags her back down. And we get this slow scene of her head bouncing off of every fucking step on the way down.
Oh, my God. It's because it just wants you to know that she is D.E.D. dead.
Well, I don't see this. My question was, did she pass out or did it kill her?
I think the purpose of it was to, her neck finally cracked.
Well, no, because we see, when she's laying at the bottom of the stairs, we see her eyes slowly closing and Bob reaching out going, Mommy! And then it goes to black.
Yeah, because she's like, I'm done. I can't fucking handle any more of you. She's like, I surrender. I'm dead.
It's kind of like Maurice in Motel Hell last week, where the girl getting chased just kind of goes, and falls over. She just gave up on life.
That's what she does. She's like, she looks at Bob and she's like, fuck it. I can't do it anymore.
I'm done with it now. So Bob wedges his giant head through the gap in the tomb and starts to wriggle free.
How the fuck does he even do that, first of all?
Hey, maybe he's still got that soft spot on his skull. It never fully formed.
That would explain a lot.
It never fully formed, that's why. But, so Freudstein is just about to grab him, and then someone else grabs him from above, and he begins screaming, and they pull him out. And I love this, because he's standing there next to May, who's just smiling at him, and he goes, May! And she goes, Bob! And they're just happy now. Like, he just watched his parents die, and he's smiling. Then suddenly a random woman goes, May, it's time to go home and remember your manners. Now that Bob is staying, show him that you can act like a Freudstein. And
we find out that it's Mrs. Freudstein, and then she just takes both of the kids.
Well, right, because she walks over and she grabs both by the hand. And she goes, you know, some other guest is surely destined to drop in. And we find out that it's Mary Freudstein. And she walks them out of the house as the childlike sobbing continues. And then we just see the three of them walking down the road, like in the middle of the road, walking away from the house. We pan the camera around to the exterior of the house. Text on the screen reads, "No one will ever know whether children are monsters or monsters are children." Quote by Henry James. And then the credits roll. I'm like, what the
fuck? End. Do you know, okay, so I know there's so many questions, but do you know what my main question is? As a fucking adult who owns property, who fucking pays the electric bill at that house with all the lights on?
True. I mean, maybe Freudstein's just stealing people's money as he kills somebody. He's mailing it out.
He's like, I will kill you.
But anywho, the little bit of trivia that we had was this. This uses the same library set featured in The Beyond. That the film's original shooting title was just Freudstein. And you already mentioned how it's part of the Gates of Hell trilogy. And one of the early VHS issues of this film in America had several films several reels out of order in the film. So further confusing the already confusing story. So, and although most of the dialogue was done in English, both May and Bob's dialogue was in Italian and then obviously dubbed over because.
Oh, and they, you know what? It still wasn't going to be good.
Yeah, no.
No, he's just Bob the Toe.
I thought he was a thumb.
Toe thumb.
Thumb toe. Oy vey. But yeah, very confusing, bizarre, but fun movie, if you can handle Bob's voice.
I'm so glad that this finally made it on the show, because I was so sad when it didn't make it the first time. And that's when I watched it. And that's when I watched the Gates of Hell trilogy, all three of them together.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I hate Bob, fucking hate Bob, I really do love this movie.
Yeah, no, it's a really good flick. Like I definitely enjoy my time with it. But it's again, there's so many things when you're watching it critically. There's like, what is up with the eyes? Why does everyone say that Norman was there? What was Norman and Anne's relationship? Like, what the fuck is going on here? How come nobody questioned why Anne was cleaning up blood? Like, did she have something to do with the Freudsteins? Was she in on this? Did she know Peterson? What the hell's going on? Like, and if she was innocent, why the fuck was she cleaning up blood without questioning it? Like, there's so many questions. Who owned the Tom and Jerry eyes? Like, whose eyes were those?
How did Bob slip through that crack in the wall? Right.
Why did Bob suddenly go full mouse and was able to get through that crack? Like, doesn't make any damn sense. Why did Freudstein cry like a small child?
Like, I don't know. Well, because anything. Bob looks like a thumb.
Oh, Lordy.
I mean, if you were going to kill a child and you were like, oh, this child has beautiful, thick, blonde hair, and then you turned it around and you were like, oh my God, it looks like a thumb, I would cry like a little child.
Oh, yeah, I don't get it. But anywho, anybody have any final thoughts on this confusing mess?
I hate Bob.
Put the subtitles on if you watch it.
Yes.
That's good advice.
Yes. And hate Bob. Can we make that a campaign? Like, you know how like in Willy Wonka, there's like this whole like internet thing about how Grandpa Joe is a scumbag? Can we make a thing about how Bob is like a thumb?
Bob is the worst child in film.
Yes.
Not to be rude, but I don't think this movie is as beloved as Willy Wonka.
Yeah, I was going to say we would need a lot more eyes on this project. I mean, maybe, you know, within certain crowds that
I
they would
feel
get
like
it.
This is a cult classic.
Oh, it totally is with a certain crowd.
Right.
All right. So I got to get in with a certain crowd. I have to change my. If. All right, guys, listeners, if you know how I can get in with a certain crowd to start my campaign about how Bob the Thumb is a fucking scumbag and worthless piece of shit, please message the Boogeyman's Closet. Let me know. I'm going through a midlife crisis, guys. I got my nose pierced again for the second time.
Oh, man. Well, we should probably mention our social media as always. So if you guys aren't following us, we are the Boogeyman's Closet on both Facebook and Instagram. And Maurice handles our Twitter. And what is that good, sir?
At Boogeyman's the.
Thank you very much. We also have a Patreon for those that are interested. It's $3 a month for all of our uncut episodes. And every month you get at least one exclusive episode just for Patreon. Any of the higher tiers, you get something sent in the mail, like artwork, prizes, etc. We're still doing our giveaways. This month has been a little hectic. I haven't posted the new one yet because it's just been a very busy month, but it is coming. So don't worry that we just gave away, or we just pulled the winner for July. So I'm going to have the August one up shortly. But for those of you that like to watch our movies before we do them, the next episode is 108, and it's going to be Night of the Demons. So the original, not the remake that we did way back when. So this will be the 1980s Night of the Demons with Linnea Quigley and the lipstick scene. So look forward to covering that.
Oh my God, stick it in my boobie.
Exactly. But all right, guys, so I guess we'll wrap it up here. So as always, this is Mike saying goodbye.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, follow us on Instagram at the Boogeyman's Closet, where you can stay up to date with everything we have planned.